Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's our pleasure to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander, 24-1 Belmont, taking on Eastern Kentucky tonight at 7 o'clock. Casey, what's going on? How are we doing?
We're good. How are you guys?
We are doing good. Wonderful. And Casey, I want to start here with you because obviously, you know, lots of people pay attention to the tournament and focus in on conference tournaments as well. But just the accomplishment of winning the regular season conference championship, I kind of want to focus in on that. Just what does that specifically mean to you, given what it takes and how much work it takes to put in order to accomplish that?
Yeah, I think it really, it just rewards steady play more than anything. You know, like a division title for the Titans or a division title for the Cubs, you know, it's the long-standing, you know, all year long, who's the best team measurement. And so it's a great accomplishment for our players and a nice reward for all their hard work.
So how the heck did you guys lose a game this year, Casey?
How did we lose one?
Yeah, how did you lose a game? Why did you lose the one game you lost?
Because they played harder and outcoached us and just whipped us from the beginning to the end. That's why we lost the game.
As you sit here right now, I mean, I think every coach would probably just rather win every single game, but is it good at all that you dropped one?
No.
No, it's not. Okay, there's nothing positive about being 24-1 versus 25-0 with the postseason approaching.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we learned a lot from that loss early in the season, and we've referenced it plenty of times. So it benefited us in hindsight, but I don't subscribe to that theory. I'd much rather win them all and then worry about, you know, peaks and valleys, not playing well maybe, but I just prefer to win them all.
Casey, when you get to this point of the season, how do you go about balancing, you know, trying to stay sharp and making sure you're doing everything you need to do to get ready, but also keeping guys fresh for, you know, the wear and tear that's been this season, not only physically, but just mentally, I think, as well, everything that's gone into getting on the floor this year. How do you balance that as a coaching staff this late in the year?
Yeah, there's no doubt that's very difficult for all coaches at this stage of the season. I mean, you definitely have to continue to prepare the same way. You know, you've got to be as ready as you can be for each game that you're playing. But naturally, practices get shorter. Typically, you're playing teams, you know, at least for the second time in the season. And so you're a little bit, there's not as much that's new. And no matter what, you've seen everything before. You know, in one way or another, you could almost not practice because you've seen every offense, every defense, throughout the season. So it is about keeping them probably more mentally fresh than it is physically fresh. We try really hard to do both, but let's go shorter, let's be quicker, let's demand less of their time, but at the same time, let's be really good at what we're doing and stay sharp in the process.
What's the biggest individual surprise for you on this team this year, Casey?
That's a tough one because we've got several good ones. Probably Ben Shepherd's emergence. We knew he was a good player. He was going to be a starter. He was going to be our best defender. You know, but he's really given us a good offensive lift. We've got some guys. Moose is Moose, and Grayson Murphy is Grayson Murphy, and then we've got some other guys that can score. But when Ben is playing well offensively and making a contribution, our team is really, really good. So that's been very helpful to us on many occasions.
Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Casey, you brought up Grayson Murphy there. You know, if anybody's paid attention to your program, they realize how good Grayson Murphy is. But I think when you really, like, start digging into the numbers, it's pretty amazing. Like, he's the only player in America with at least 300 rebounds, 250 assists, and 100 steals since the start of 2019-2020. So, like, we know how good he is offensively, but just his all-around game, you're talking about one of the really, really good players in the country.
Yeah, an elite player. That's a difference maker for his team every time we put the uniform on. I think that's what's most important is how he impacts our team in every game that we play. And very few guys can do it in such a variety of ways the way that he can do it on both ends of the floor. You know, I mean, he can give us the lift that we need offensively. He definitely will give us the lift that we need defensively. And a lot of nights he does both.
Yeah, just about had a triple-double the other day. 8, 8, and 10. Unbelievable rebounder. I mean, a point guard who rebounds like that. But, Casey, we talk a lot with teams about – I mean, when we talk about like Tennessee basketball, like who is going to want the ball, take the shot, you know, late for that team. Now, in that Austin Peay game, I mean, Grayson Murphy basically was like, you know what, I'm going to the hole, see if you can stop me, and did a lot to pull that game out. Do you think about it that way? Like if you're in a tight game coming up here in the postseason, is it, I guess you obviously the ball's going to be in his hands, but is he also the guy that you'd want to shoot it, even though he's not necessarily a shooter?
He honestly, we have almost nothing in our package for him offensively, literally almost nothing. There's only one or two things that I can do for him. He gets all that done on his own, and he's going to show up whether I call his number or not. He's done it multiple times. You mentioned the Austin Peay game, but I mean, there any close game that we've had this season, he's made huge baskets down the stretch to give us a lead, to extend the lead. You know, the game-changing play, whatever it is, he's going to make that whether I call his number or not.
Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Casey, we've talked to you a lot here on the show. You've always been very complimentary, obviously, of Coach Bird and what he built before you came in and took over at the head coaching position. But it's just pretty incredible to look at this program and what it's accomplished. 12 regular season titles in the past 16 seasons, a regular, you know, contributor to the NCAA tournament. When you look at your program and what you're continuing to build here at Belmont, what stands out to you, and what do you think the trajectory is? Like, how far do you think this could go?
Yeah, well, definitely the consistency is what, you know, we're most proud of. And, you know, and really, you know, a lot of people forget we're still relatively new to this whole thing. I mean, we've only been Division I for 20 years, you know, and we've got 26 championships regular season and postseason in that process. So we tend to take it for granted. But, you know, but I still think the best is yet to come. I mean, Belmont as an institution is, you know, is off the charts. It gets better every year. There's cranes on our campus for about 20 years straight because we continue to grow and build and get better. And so, you know, as an institution, as an athletic department, and definitely as a basketball team, we've got more doors to knock down in the future.
Talking to Belmont men's basketball coach Casey Alexander. So, Casey, Mark Few had an interesting interview recently, asked about, you know, their conference tournament, and basically it was like, I mean, look, we're going to play, but obviously there is some concern about, I mean, this is a team that, of course, you know, can win it all as an undefeated team, but just the fact that you don't want any sort of risk before you get to Indianapolis in the NCAA tournament. I mean, have you thought about that, discussed that in terms of your own conference tournament, and the idea of, you know, you guys are the clear champions, take a rest, get to Indy, and don't have any sort of risk that comes with playing a conference tournament?
Right. Well, I mean, if they called, if the OVC called today and said, hey, we canceled the tournament, I'd be just fine with that, I will admit, because of our position. But there's 11 other teams in our league who would, you know, who wouldn't like that proposal. So, and quite honestly, it's not even, you know, it's not even on the radar as a possibility. So I haven't thought twice about it. I mean, you know, we're definitely have had no intention but to play in the conference tournament. We knew all along that was on the horizon. You know, the format for our conference tournament has changed, and we've got to go win the conference tournament to play in the NCAA tournament just like we ordinarily do. And so we'll be ready. I mean, there's risk involved. We think about COVID testing and risk literally every day, pretty much all day. And so that doesn't change. It feels a little bit more dire in some ways, because there's so much on the line right now with the conference tournament next week and then whatever comes after that. So we're on our best behavior, minimizing risk, doing everything we can to make sure that we can play, and then it's a matter of playing and doing our jobs to win.
Casey, I mentioned the game tonight against Eastern Kentucky. You saw them a couple of weeks ago, a 92-74 win for you guys. What stands out when you look at Eastern Kentucky, and what sort of a challenge do you expect tonight?
Yeah, and then Morehead on Saturday, both, you know, the second and third place teams in our league right now. But Eastern Kentucky is an unconventional matchup. They're 94 feet literally from tip to buzzer, and so it's concerning, you know, that you just have to play a different style, and playing that on the road is even more concerning. So and we played our best game against them, you know, in a long while. That was the best we've played, and when we played them at our place a couple of weeks ago. So we absolutely understand that it's going to take a great effort, that you know, that there's no chance we're walking in there and winning just because we show up wearing blue uniforms.
Obviously, you have this great, and you guys are done at home. What was it like this year at home? I mean, I know it's nothing like what it has been, but did you still, you know, feel any kind of advantage, any sort of, you know, appreciation for the people who were able to be there for what this team has been?
Well, I certainly had appreciation for the people that were there, and I have regret for the many that we've heard from that were disappointed they couldn't come. But it didn't feel like anything normal. I mean, you know, it's our home gym, and we're comfortable, and we're familiar, and we get our own locker room, and, you know, sleep in our own beds and things like that. But home court advantage, you know, is almost non-existent this season, you know, when you think about crowds and things like that. So it was very different, you know, but, hey, it is what it is, and it's just not much we can do about it. So we've been saying that since last March.
Casey Alexander, head coach of the 24-1 Belmont basketball team, is our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, taking on Eastern Kentucky tonight at 7 o'clock. Casey, thanks so much for taking time to join us, and good luck tonight and the rest of this season.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Casey Alexander, maybe the best team in Tennessee right now. Belmont basketball has just been lighting it up, 24-1 on the season, and tell you what, they look awfully strong heading into the conference tournament coming up, and I think certainly going to be in the NCAA tournament and maybe be able to do some damage when the NCAA tournament comes around.
I vote for Tennessee 5, Belmont 12.
Hey.
Let's see it. I'd love it. That'd be fantastic. Also, by the way, and this is a different year, so not talking about this year, but every year, Tennessee, you should play Belmont.
Agreed.
And I know sometimes Belmont can't do it. They have their stuff going on, but we should get more in-state teams playing each other. We need to have a huge event in Nashville to showcase all the great basketball teams we have. And once we get to normalcy, to some level of normalcy, that should be an even bigger priority in Nashville. So let's do it.
I would agree 100%. I'm all for it. When we come back, we'll continue the college basketball discussion. Could Belmont be the best team in the state, in the NCAA, if I could spit it out? And how can Tennessee recover from another stagnant offensive performance last night against a very shorthanded Vanderbilt team? We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have teamed up to help you continue the tradition with a hockey home gating party, and it's time to text into the game line at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 for your chance to win the T-Mobile hockey home gate. Watch a weekend Preds game with a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food for your home gate. Text the word ICE to 615-737-1025 now to enter, and the winner will be contacted later today. You must be 21 or older to enter the competition. And again, today the word is ICE at 615-737-1025. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, we just had Casey Alexander on, head coach of Belmont, and obviously, he's done an outstanding job this year with Belmont. They're 24-1. They've won the regular season OVC title once again. And he's got this team playing at a level right now that it's funny because we've just kind of grown to expect it with Belmont, that they're going to be very, very good every single year. What do you think this process is going to be like for Casey Alexander? And anytime you've got a young coach having some success, their name starts to get talked about, maybe for some higher profile jobs. How much interest do you think would be there for Casey Alexander, if not after this year, in the next few years, as he continues to just roll along with this Belmont basketball program?
Oh, there's going to be interest. There's no doubt about it. He's going to have opportunities. I mean, you look at just Belmont right now. It's amazing, like Grayson Murphy and Nick Mazinski are juniors. I swear they're six-year seniors, but they've been key guys from the start. So you're bringing those guys back next year. I mean, Ben Shepherd is tremendous. I think he's a guy at Belmont who can play in the NBA someday. I mean, he may be like next year, and he may be – I don't know. That maybe I'm overstating things, but I think he can. He certainly is – professional basketball career. Jacoby Wood, really talented freshman who's a key guy off the bench for this team. So, I mean, they bring everyone back. Now, Obviously you don't know. I mean, Adam Kunkel was their leading scorer last year. He transfers to Xavier. That kind of stuff can happen. But as of now, this entire team comes back next year. It's ridiculous. And this is a team, I mean, next year, with all these guys, another year of seasoning, all that stuff, not only can they rip through the OVC again, they could go take down some big teams early. And, I mean, so if you get Belmont to that level, that could happen there, people are going to be coming for you. Now, Vanderbilt, Malcolm Turner did call Casey during the search that Jerry Stackhouse got the job. I think it was kind of a courtesy call more than anything, but there was at least some sort of, you know, Malcolm Turner called him. I mean, there was some level of a reach out there. I think there's going to be teams coming for Casey Alexander. It's going to be interesting because obviously as a coach, as a competitor, if you have a chance to coach at like the highest level, there's a lot of appeal. There's more money in it.
Sure.
Things like that. But this is also kind of a special situation where you have something rolling. You've been a part of it most of your life. You played there.
Yep.
You're from Nashville. And there's a lot of things that I think could work in Belmont's favor down the road. I think it would have to be – I don't think just like any Power 5 team coming at Casey Alexander is going to get him. I think it would have to be – and I'm just speaking for him. I mean, we should have asked him last segment. Like, come on, who could hire
who
you
could,
away,
yeah.
Casey?
Yeah.
But I he's going to have opportunities. There is no doubt. He's done a just tremendous job. I mean, you really look at his whole – I mean, this has been impressive. But, I mean, look at what he did at Lipscomb.
Yeah.
And the players he found and recruited and developed. I mean, it's too bad, kind of. And I know Rick Byrd would say, no, it's not too bad. I'm good. I'm happy. But, like, I would have liked to see more years of Rick Byrd and Casey Alexander
head-to-head
recruiting battles,
yeah.
Even. Because they've had some already that were really interesting. And, you know, some of those guys on this team now that Casey's coaching, he wanted at Lipscomb. Rick was beating him for those guys. It's funny. I got a story on Jacoby Wood coming up, and he told me that he would have picked Lipscomb and Casey. And Rick, and they were both recruiting him when he was a freshman in high school. But anyway, that would have been fun. But if you look at the total path of Casey, it's nothing but making things better and winning. And there are going to be – he's young. I mean, there's going to be a lot of schools, I think, in the future who knock on his door.
Is Belmont the best team in the state? Because I think some people – I mean, you look at it, they're 24-1. Obviously, from a record perspective, they are. But it's the OVC. I mean, obviously, it's not the same level of competition as SEC basketball. And Tennessee, from just a pure talent standpoint, is more talented than Belmont is. But could Belmont be the best team in the state? Could they end up being the most dangerous team in the tournament from the state? Based on what you've seen from Tennessee.
They could be. I mean, the sum of their parts is certainly much higher level than what Tennessee is. Like you said, I mean, Tennessee has two guys who are going to be drafted in the first round, but they're also freshmen. And so that's kind of what we're seeing. We're seeing the most talented players trying to figure it out, and you're seeing seniors, especially one senior, really struggle. And I think Belmont and Tennessee played 10 times. I would pick Tennessee to win maybe six, maybe probably more like seven, probably seven of the 10. But it's not like it's this one perfect night where Belmont hits every three. No, it's not that. It's close. I think most times if they played 10 times, you'd have good basketball games. And they'd be fun basketball games too. They would be up and down. I think the up and down nature actually suits Tennessee. You know, I think they would probably have more offensive success than they've had in some of these SEC games. But I think they may be the best team, and I think they may be the team. I won't be surprised at all if they are – the team that goes furthest. If they do more in the tournament than Tennessee, it would be a huge disappointment for Tennessee, but I certainly think it's possible.
And speaking of Tennessee, you get a 70-58 win last night against Vanderbilt, albeit a very shorthanded Vanderbilt team last night. No Scottie Pippen Jr., Dylan Dessou out, Cleavon Brown out as well. So it was a game that when you found out that news in the pregame, you thought Tennessee should absolutely roll in this game, and they didn't. I mean, early in the game, they were struggling. They were behind at one point. You figured it out a little bit earlier or later in the first half and into the second half. But offensively, like Victor Bailey, 21 points, 5 of 8 from 3. Jaden Springer, 20 points. That was about it for Tennessee offensively. And other than that, I mean, turnovers were a big story last night as well. And they just looked discombobulated out there. And a lot of Tennessee fans on Twitter pointing out, you know, it didn't look like they have a plan offensively. And it was one of those games where, like, it's a win and you'll take it. But honestly, Joe, I think I felt worse about Tennessee last night after the win than I felt heading into the game.
Yeah, they settled for jumpers too much. In the half court, sometimes it just – I mean, they're a strangely kind of constructed team because Vescovi is a point guard, but he's – if you want a shot clock situation ball screen, you'd rather have a Springer or a Johnson with the ball in their hands, you know. So Vescovi kind of becomes just a spot-up shooter on the wing. He spearheads your defense and does a lot of good things, but sometimes he gets – overwhelmed by the other point guard. Then you have Fulkerson, who just doesn't seem to have any confidence right now and is fading that lineup. I think that they just have to attack. You know, if Pons does what he did last night, put the ball on the floor and go dunk on someone. Or it's okay if someone hits you and you have to go to the line. Like the constantly settling for the jump shot is frustrating. And then what happened at the end? Keon Johnson gets a backdoor dunk. Jaden Springer just drives in, makes a really tough bank shot. Then Keon Johnson makes another play, and they win. They save the day. They've done it before. I think they have to. Those guys, this is your 1 year with them. So Rick Barnes has had other teams that had great players he knew were going to be in the NBA the next year. And, like, you know, when he had Durant, everything went through Durant.
Sure.
Because that's how good Durant is. But I'd be trying to feature those guys and run things for those guys as much as possible and hope that Victor Bailey stays hot because that does make a difference.
Preds fans, make sure you join us Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. for Smashville Live every single Wednesday during the Preds season, and it'll feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. And this year we've also gone virtual, so that means you can watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. Smashville Live brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. To view or listen to past shows, go to thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live. We'll be right back with Preds radio analyst Hal Gill. We'll look ahead to tonight's matchup against Detroit. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. The Nashville Predators won two games in a row, going for three tonight against Detroit. Puck drop at 6:30, pregame at 5:30 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Preds radio analyst Hal Gill, presented by Duncan, featuring their new location in Belle Mead, and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. Hal, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Not much is going on. Just ready for another game day. Was at the rink for Ford Ice Center in Bellevue last night for Smashville Live, and also got to see NBA win the Nash Championship, the Predators Cup. So it's been a pretty good couple days here, so I'm excited for some more excitement tonight. Hopefully another win.
Absolutely, and the Predators, to that point, Hal, they've won two games in a row, a dominating performance against Columbus on Saturday night, and then were able to get it done against Detroit with two goals in the third period on Tuesday. What do you like about what you've seen from the Predators in the last couple of games?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like they're trying to find their way, and sometimes it's not always pretty. And so as tough as the first two periods were against Detroit, I feel like nothing was happening. It wasn't clean. The passing wasn't there. But they found a way to just grind out two periods until they got some scoring touch and get a power play goal. And sometimes that's the process you need to go through. And I feel like that's where they're at right now is being patient. I call it hospital hockey. Lots of patience is where they go out there and wait till they get their chances. And if their power play steps up like it did, then they can be patient all they want and wait for that big power play goal.
Hospital hockey. I love it.
That's good. You use that on the broadcast, Hal?
Yeah, of course. Of course. That was my old go-to. Back in the day, we call it, there's hospital hockey, and then there's cops and robbers because there would be lots of holdups. But the the league went and changed on us, so you can't hold up anymore. So that was the old days.
Nice. Well, speaking of, you know, patience and sort of, you know, letting things develop a little bit. You see Tolvanen's rip on the power play the other night, and you know he's sort of cemented himself here a little bit. What do you think about him, his progress, and you know the importance of kind of getting this opportunity to play things out and not worry about, you know, a couple bad shifts maybe costing you?
Yeah, that's, you know what, I was never a skilled guy, but I've seen enough skilled guys go through the progression where they're trying to find themselves in the league and they're trying to do all the right things. Everyone says, okay, you can score goals, but you got to learn the game. You got to learn the North American game. You got to be able to battle in the corners. And yeah, that's all fine and good. But if you get a guy that can just score on the power play, I'll put him on my team. And Tolvanen is one of those guys. You know, you saw the quick release that he has. If he can score goals, he's going to get a little bit more confidence, and then he's going to go out 5-on-5 with that confidence and be able to make plays. And that's what you're looking for. I don't need Elie Tolvanen to run a guy through the boards and win every puck battle and come out of the corner and stuff it in the net. I need him to kind of sit in the weeds, find the spot, have the confidence to read the play, and then hopefully get rewarded. Now he's playing with Ryan Johansson, and I think that's a good mix for him where he can kind of find those open spots and Joey can get it to him. And so power play gets your confidence, and then you go out and play 5-on-5 and hopefully add on that. So I like the way his game is going right now. It's going to be interesting to see over the next few games if he can build that confidence and keep going with it.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill on the line with us, presented by Duncan and by TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. How we talked to Philip Forsberg before the season, and he talked about wanting to find that next level of consistency in his game. And as you watch him play this year, not only from a production standpoint, but with the way that he's playing the game, do you think he's found it? Do you think Philip Forsberg has taken that next step?
He's getting there. There's a couple times where you say, "Geez, where's Phil? Why isn't Phil?" He kind of hides in the weeds, and I think he's a player, if he could believe in the fact that he should dominate every shift and have that mentality, it's hard to say go have that mentality where you dominate every shift, but if he believes it and he goes out there and plays with the command that I think he can get, like pushing through the neutral zone, I see him sometimes where he's looking to make a play and he should just be going as fast as he can, blow it out, get through the neutral zone, push defense back, and then he's got the skill to make the plays. But if he can set up his power game and is just all-out go, he can be deadly. And he does that. He does that most of the time. I think he could do it all the time, and that's what's going to get him over the edge.
So Hal Pekarinen coming off his 59th career shutout, getting the start again tonight. And I'll be honest, I didn't necessarily think that we would see this after the way last season ended. What's it say about him that he has, you know, had the off season he did, obviously, and then he's performing like this at that age and trying to lift a team that's been struggling?
Yeah, there's so many things I could say about Pex. It's been pretty remarkable. He's been really grooming UC Saros to take his job, which is a hard thing to do anyway. He's always been supportive, but he's never lost that intensity and that drive to be the number one guy. And I had a talk with him last year, and he said he really believed he needed to be there if they wanted to win. He has the mentality that I'm the guy. And as much as he's cheering on Juice, he still believes in himself. And I think this year, you know, maybe having the kid and having a baby around the house gives him a little bit more perspective. But he's said it a couple times where he comes to the rink and he enjoys it and wants to take in everything that the NHL is going to give him. And whatever this team is going to give him, he's going to take it. And so he's having fun. He's competing. And then ultimately, he's making big saves when he needs to, timely saves. Of course, he gets the shutout, but he had to make a couple big saves. I don't think he was overly worked. It's just when you need him, he was there. And so, yeah, leave him in there. Let him keep running with it because, let's face it, the Preds need him right now.
Hal, we talked to you a little bit about this last week, and obviously you're not going to replace Matias Ekholm and the production that he brings to the table. But I do think Ben Harper has stepped in and done a really nice job in the last couple of games with Dante Fabbro. What have you noticed from him, and why do you think it's been, to this point, such a seamless transition between him and Dante Fabbro?
Yeah, it's been good. Obviously, with Ekholm out, that hurts. He's an elite defenseman, so it's hard to jump into his shoes. I thought Tenorti did a great job. He's just more of a defensive player. I feel like Harper, you know, he's playing a big body, long stick, plays really well in all situations, but he was adding that offensive upside. He was pushing up the ice with Fabbro, and I think they've done that well. It's not just, hey, Fabs, go, I'm going to stay back. I think Tenorti was a little bit more like that, although I do like Tenorti's game. Harper adds a little bit more offense, and so they're a give and take moving up the ice. I still think Fabbro can do a little bit more pushing up and letting Harper back him up. But I like the way that they're playing together right now. And that's a tough spot to fall into because you have Josi and Ellis who top lines are going to try and stay away from those guys. And so you're going to see top lines try to match, especially on the road with the last change. Detroit's going to try and get those guys out against anyone but Josi and Ellis. And that's a tall task to take on top lines in the NHL.
All right, Hal, I need you to weigh in on something really important here, if you're willing. I give you the context. So we've been talking about J.J. Watt a lot on the show, and there's a headshot of him like basically growling at the camera like he's furious. Okay,
on this team pictures,
his team. Yeah. Now during the break, I Googled Hal Gill headshot just to see what kind of a headshot guy you were. It seemed like for the most part you're a smile guy. But tell me, you know, what do you like when you go into those? Are you like, okay, this year I'm going to smile, this year I'm going to look more serious? And what do you think about the whole growling at the camera thing?
You know what? There's part of me that's like, hey, that's kind of a hard-o move. You know, like, you know, no one wants to see that guy. And I think J.J. Watt has a little bit of him. I don't know. I mean, after that rant he did where he went on about how it means so much to him to win and everything, I feel like he's kind of got that. So I think it says a lot about your personality. But at the same time, I've gone into photo shots just laughing as hard as I can and then just making a mean face just to be a more of a donkey. So I think there's a fine line between being a clown and being a hardo. And so, you know, whatever you want to go with, I think that's the fun part is you have to look at Brandon Tanev's headshot. That's the one. I don't know what it is, but it's horrifying. So look up Brandon Tanev, and that's the headshot that you guys want to see.
Who was the baseball player?
There's a baseball player named Jared Hughes. You'll have to check out as well. It's pretty outstanding.
Yeah, look up Jared Hughes, man.
Yeah, so I like that. I like guys that play for the camera. I don't know who the catcher was years ago that every time he sees a camera, he just stares at it for, and pauses. And so I love that stuff. I love the you know, I don't necessarily care too much for the hard-o, but for the clown, I'm happy to see it.
Prince Radio. I don't know how to describe Brandon Tanev's that shot.
It kind of looks like
he needs to be a member of the San Francisco Giants. Yeah. It has long, straggly hair. Looks like he needs to take a shower.
And the bug eyes just coming out of his head. You know, it's a good one.
It is scary.
Preds Radio analyst Hal Gill.
College kid, you know?
That's right. Preds Radio analyst Hal Gill has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, presented by Dunkin', featuring their new location in Bellmead, and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with 5-star service. Hal, appreciate you taking time to join us as always, and have fun on the call tonight for the Predators against Detroit.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hal Gill, always entertaining here on the program. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Hal had to say there and revisit our poll question of the day as well. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We have tweeted out a doozy at 102.5 The Game.
It's beautiful.
On Twitter.
Beautiful.
Comparing the headshot that Rex Rhodes been whining about all day with J.J. Watt with a headshot from Joe Rexroad from, what did you say, 2001, 2002?
Yeah, I think it's more 02. Porth trying to make me seem older than I am, saying circa 2000. That's
that just
fine.
Sounds better.
Yeah, of course. And again, like, I mean, I'll grant you, Buck Rising tweets, my God, you've aged poorly. I will grant you that I look like a bit of a tool here, and I should have just smiled. Like, I probably every mugshot, sorry, headshot since then, I have smiled because it's like, why? Come on, just smile. You know,
well, what were you going for here? Deal? Were you going for the just the I'm a serious journalist?
Yeah,
take my work seriously.
I guess. I think what I probably, if I went back through like all the sports team pictures as a kid and stuff in high school and everything, probably not a ton of smiling. But there's a difference between not smiling, I don't have a problem with that, and doing what J.J. Watt is doing. Look at it. His eyebrows are like furrowed to the max. I mean, he's
furrowed.
Yeah, look at him. I mean, he's not just looking at the camera with a serious face. He's like, I'm going to crush you. I mean, come on. I know you're J.J. Watt.
Baby.
You already J.J. Watt. Smile. And then smile and break a quarterback in half. What is
set
this crap?
Set the tone. This is. You think Brady's smiling in his pictures? He actually is.
He probably is. I mean, at his age, you know, it's better to smile. That doesn't make any sense. I have no idea. I don't know. I'm just trying to make a Brady age joke, and I'm older than him. Barely. But, yeah, I mean, this is – they're smiling is the best option. Like I said, I went through Hal Gill. Most of his were smiling. There was one with the Preds where he just sort of looks confused.
The Brandon Tanev that Hal Gill threw out there, especially his one with the Penguins.
Oh, my God.
It is something.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he's
like
being
a ghost snuck up behind him or something and scared him. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like he's being hypnotized.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, yeah.
And the thing is, like with professional athletes, it's not like they just take the picture and move on. Like with us, they take the picture, they move on, they put it up there, whether or not it's good. The athletes approve this. They take a look at it. They're very concerned with what they look like. And they say, yeah, that's good. So that means in some of the mugshots you see, they looked at it and they're like,
that.
Oh, yeah. Some of the mugshots you, or the mugshots, the headshots that you see.
Say it's hard.
I know,
it's
you've
hard.
Got me into this habit now. Some of the headshots that you see, they looked at it and were like, yeah, that, all right, sounds good. We'll roll with that one.
Well, right. And like your guy, Jared Hughes, he must have been
Hall
doing this all this. Screw with people,
he's
right?
Got to be.
Because some of them are just ridiculous.
I mean, I have no clue what Jared Hughes was like as a baseball player. I'm
he
sure
was
Ryan
awful.
Port does.
He was awful. He was a member of the Cincinnati Reds bullpen like 3 years ago, and he stunk.
Well, he looks like a deranged Andy Dufresne in some of these pictures from Shawshank Redemption. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I'm gonna see if I can find. Let's see if I can find his Reds mugshot.
Well, I think one, he looks like he's
smiling in the Reds.
There's one where it's like a side view. That's creepy, too. Oh, my gosh. Look at these expressions. I encourage all listeners to Google Jared Hughes.
Jared Hughes. Headshot.
Yeah, headshots. God.
He would always be the guy to run out of the bullpen, like dead on
sprint. Full
sprint?
I respect
to
that.
The mound.
Okay.
And then be huffing and puffing, and if he got a out, he would look at the hitter that he got out and just have this look on his face like, I got you out.
I respect it.
See, now,
setting the
it's
tone.
Okay to make a face like that in real life to an opponent. Like, if J.J. made that face after sacking a quarterback, great. This is your team headshot. Children want you to autograph this, and you look like that?
Jared Hughes also looked like he was, like, shot-putting when he threw the pitch.
It's an impressive form.
He had a weird,
it seemed very effective.
Just a weird wind-up and everything. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he looked like Mr. Grumble Pants out there.
Mr. Grumble Pants. All right.
I've never heard that. Is that a thing? Is that like on some
I think I just made that up.
Show? Okay.
That's what happens after you eat Skyline Chili, I guess. Let's go to our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. If you were J.J. Watt and the money was equal, where would you sign this offseason? The options are Buffalo, Green Bay, Tennessee, or elsewhere. Right now, the Titans leading the way with 38% of the vote. Almost 400 votes are in. 35% say Green Bay, 20% say Buffalo, and 7% going with others. So it looks like the Titans are going to win this poll in the local market here, Joe Rexroad. How surprised are you?
Not, but I don't think they're thinking of the. I don't know that they're thinking of JJ's best interests here. You got to think of it from JJ's perspective.
Okay.
What place would bring a smile to his face? I say Green Bay.
I say Green Bay too.
And that would bring a smile to your face, maybe, if they don't
pay him
too much.
Depends on how much money it is. And if it's anywhere near the report that Diana Russini had earlier, oh boy. Diana Russini reporting that multiple offers have been made for J.J. Watt, and the highest of which is somewhere between $15 and $16 million per season, per her sources. That's a lot of money for J.J. Watt. So it is kind of funny.
It's way too much.
We spent all day yesterday talking about how, you know, the salary cap is going to be difficult to manage this year, and maybe your contracts aren't going to look the way you think they are if you're a free agent. And then you hear reports that maybe somebody's willing to pay $16 million per season for J.J. Watt.
Yeah, it's. I hope that that's a team that's just not on his list, that isn't a contender, that has tons of cap space, that's saying, hey, we're just going to throw this out, and why not? We got the cap space. We'll get someone who can come in here and change the culture. If it's one of these teams that actually can add him, you're paying way too much.
How about John Glennon taking a shot at you on Twitter with your headshot?
Yeah, he said, that's gout for you because I had a bout of the gout last summer, and everyone likes to joke about it. Not very fun. But so I just tweeted at Glennon, okay, let's see your mug from 20 years ago. Any random follicles loitering? We can turn this to – we can get nasty if we need to here. We can get nasty.
Rex Rowe getting defensive a little bit. I like it.
Hey, listen, I don't mind the sharing of a picture when I was – way less hideous than I am now. Like, I'm fine with it, actually.
Your hair is like exactly the same, though.
That's true. Is that good or bad?
That's good.
Yeah. Except that what's directly underneath the hair.
I mean, if you look back at my hair in 2001, a lot more hair there.
I was about to say.
I was 9, but a lot more hair there.
Gosh. Yeah, that's also depressing. So when I took this mugshot, you guys were like in what, 4th grade?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Glennon still hasn't answered me. I'm waiting, Glennon. Let's see your mugshot from 20 years ago.
We've had our guesses on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, of who the team is that's offering J.J. Watt $16 million. Most popular is the Cleveland Browns. I feel
probably
like that's
a good guess. I think that's a good guess. Do we have any more details on the barbecue restaurant that J.J. Watt was at that didn't have power, but he told everybody that he's only coming here if he plays with Clowney? I'd like more details.
We have no
more
details.
What were his sides?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. You can find all kinds of good ones in Texas.
You can find all sorts of good barbecue options here in Nashville.
You can.
I mean, J.J. Watt could go to Peg Leg Porker, could go to Edley's, could go to Martin's. A lot of good barbecue options.
That's true.
Chris on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, Jared Hughes looks like he's trying to hold a fart in an elevator.
Yeah. Well, he's got a wide variety. Yeah. I mean, one year he's like, I'm going to give you the weirdest grin ever. And then the next year he's like, I'm going to look like I just woke up and I have no idea where I am. But that's a good one. That's a good way to put it.
That's going to do it for us today.
Are you sure?
Robbie and Rex.
Can we talk more about this?
ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. We'll have all sorts of discussion for you. Maybe it's headshots. Maybe it's J.J. Watt. Who knows what direction.
Call your headshot Friday. Let's go.
Tomorrow as well.
Or is it mugshot?
Yes.
Your call.
Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.